welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Happy holidays to all our Old Time Radio Hour listeners. This week we have two Christmas-themed mysteries and a bonus track from a 1938 children's show called Jonathan Thomas and His Christmas on the Moon. First, we have a treat from a British adaptation of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Sir Ralph Richardson and Sir John Gielgud in The Blue Carbuncle, first broadcast in 1954 for syndication.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, the original and immortal stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized anew, with Sir Ralph Richardson as Dr. Watson and Sir John Gielgud in the role of Sherlock Holmes.
Christmas in our London of the 1880s. With a sparkle round the gaslights and a glow on the hurrying passers-by laden with mysterious parcels. With candles, shop windows heaped with toys, with tinkling hansoms hastening past. With a million tall trees and a million tall drawing rooms. Christmas. And in the glow and glory of it, I called at Baker Street to see my old friend Sherlock Holmes.
Compliments of the season, Holmes.
Who? What? Who's that?
Compliments of the season, Holmes.
Oh, Watson, it's you. Good evening. How do you do?
Well, I must say that's a deuce cold greeting for the time of year. But don't you believe in the Christmas spirit?
Yes, yes, of course I do, my dear fellow. It's only that I'm profoundly engaged. My mind was elsewhere. Close the door, Watson, and come in. There's a confounded din from the street. Yes, that's much better. Sit down, won't you?
Well, of course, if you're engaged, Holmes, I'd better not stay. I've still some visits to make to my patients.
No, of course. You know how glad I always am to have you, old friend, to discuss my problems with. Now, help yourself to a whiskey and soda, Watson.
Oh, thank you.
And just tell me what you think of that.
Think of what?
That. Hanging on the back of the chair there. I've been contemplating it for the last half hour.
It's only a hat, a simple, hard, black hat.
Just so.
You best sit down with me by the fire and tell me all about it. And I'll brew some punch.
Excellent, excellent, Watson. You know where everything is, of course. And meanwhile, I'll tell you the tale of this hat, and I ask you to consider it, Watson, not as a battered old billycock, but as an intellectual problem.
Well, let me find the nutmeg grater first, and I'm ready. Here it is.
Well, then, you know Peterson, the commissionaire at the hotel on the corner?
Well, of course. Why? Is it his hat?
No, his trophy.
Huh? Trophy?
Well, he found it. The owner is unknown. It arrived here, Watson, in company with a fine fat goose, which I have no doubt at this moment is roasting merrily in front of the Petersons' fire.
Oh, well, a goose and a hat. No doubt the connection's obvious, but where have you put the lemons, my dear fella?
Lemons? Oh, try the gasogene stand.
No.
Oh, well, then that hideous bamboo smoking companion that Mrs. Hudson will insist on sitting down beside the sofa every afternoon.
Ah, yes, here we are.
Well, now the facts are these, Watson. Peterson, who's a very honest fellow, as you know, was returning about 4 o'clock this morning from some small seasonal jollification and walking homewards down the Tottenham Court Road.
Oh, stir the fire a bit, will you? My hands are full.
Certainly, Watson. Of course. In front of him, there in the gaslight, Peterson suddenly saw a tallish man with a stick walking with a slight stagger and carrying a white goose over his shoulder.
Uh-huh.
As he reached the corner of Warren Street, this man was suddenly set upon by a crowd of roughs. One of them knocked his hat off, and as he raised his stick to defend himself, he accidentally swung it against a shop window and smashed the glass.
Oh, well, what happened next, Holmes?
Well, Peterson, who was still wearing his commissionaire's uniform, rushed to the man's assistance. But the fellow, shocked at breaking a window and seeing a man in uniform running up to him, dropped his goose and took to his heels. The roughs did the same, leaving Peterson master of the field of battle. He brought both bird and hat to me. There was a card on the bird's leg with "For Mrs. Henry Baker" written on it, and the initials HB are written on the label inside the hat.
Uh-huh.
But of course there are some thousands of people named Baker in this great city of ours, so it has been my little occupation for this last hour or so to try and deduce the exact identity of this one.
From his hat?
Yes, Watson. The owner of this hat, Watson, highly intellectual, fairly well-to-do, but in the space of the last 3 years seems to have fallen on evil days. He used to have foresight, but he has less now than formerly. I suspect he's taken to drink, which would also perhaps account for the fact that his wife no longer loves him.
Oh, my dear.
Middle-aged, goes out little, has grizzled hair, which he anoints with lime cream, and has been to the barber's lately. It is also extremely improbable that he has gas laid on in his house.
Ah, oh, come on. Now, you're surely joking.
Not at all.
I've seen you at this kind of thing before, of course. But this is going too far. His wife, Holmes.
Ah.
You said she'd stopped loving him.
The hat hasn't been brushed for weeks, my dear fellow.
Ah?
Well, when I see you, Watson, with such an accumulation of dust on your respectable headgear, I shall expect you to be returning to your old quarters here within the next day or two.
Oh, you know, you've an answer for everything. Wonderful, wonderful. Except the gas. The fact that there's no gas laid on in his house. Now, that really is impossible.
Not at all. One tallow stain, or even two, might come by chance. But when I see no less than five, I think there can be little doubt that the owner must be brought in frequent contact with burning tallow. Yes, he probably walks upstairs at night with his hat in one hand and a guttering candle in the other. Anyhow, he never got tallow stains from a gas jet. Satisfied?
Pomaso. It's very, very most ingenious.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
Well, I must say it seems rather a waste of your talents that there's been no crime committed. Nothing but the loss of a Christmas goose.
That goose, my dear fellow.
Mr. Holmes, are you in?
Hello, what's this? Who is it? Yes, come in.
Mr. Holmes.
My dear Peterson.
Oh, it's the goose, sir.
Well, has it returned to life and flapped off through the kitchen window? You're as white as a sheet.
Oh, well, see here, sir, here. Look what my wife found inside its crop.
Watson, look.
This is treasure trove indeed, Peterson.
Yes.
A precious stone. One of the biggest I've ever seen.
It's more than a precious stone, Watson. It's the precious stone. The blue carbuncle.
Great heavens. The Countess of Morcar?
Precisely. Missing for 5 days and with a descriptive advertisement every morning in the Times about it. And a reward of £1,000 for its recovery.
£1,000? Cool, love a duck.
A goose, Peterson.
Oh. A blue carbuncle.
Yes, I remember now. Lost at the Hotel Cosmopolitan.
That's it, and they've arrested some plumber fellow who's supposed to have taken it from the Countess's jewel case.
£1,000 reward. Oh, cool.
I was reading about it only just now. Yes, here we are. The Hotel Cosmopolitan jewel robbery. John Horner, plumber, 26... was brought up on the charge of having abstracted from the jewel case of the Countess of Morcar the valuable gem known as the Blue Carbuncle.
What else, Watson?
Well, it seems that this fellow Horner was taken up to the Countess's room by her maid, a girl called Catherine Cusack, to do some kind of repair.
Mm.
When the head attendant of the hotel went in, a fellow called James Ryder, to see if the work was finished, he found the jewel case was lying empty and that Horner had gone. Well, he gave the alarm, and Horner was found by the police, and they arrested him. The case has been referred to the assizes.
Mm. Well, then, the only problem remaining to be solved is the sequence of events leading from an empty jewel case in a hotel room at one end to the crop of a goose in the Tottenham Court Road at the other. Just give me a pencil and that slip of paper, will you, Peterson?
Huh? Oh, yes, sir. £1,000. Oh, blimey, down here, sir.
What are you going to do, Holmes?
Find the owner of this hat. H.B. Henry Baker. Yes, he began as a joke, and now he's become a mystery. We'll try the simplest method first. An advertisement. How's this, Watson? Read it.
Found at the corner of Warren Street, a goose and a black felt hat. Mr. Henry Baker can have the same by applying at 6:30 this evening at 221 Baker Street.
Clear and concise, I think. Yes, if you've quite recovered from your astonishment, Peterson.
Sir?
Just run down to the advertisement office and have this put in all the evening papers, will you?
All of them, sir?
All of them. Oh, and by the way, Peterson.
Sir?
On your way back, just see if you can buy another goose.
Another goose, sir?
Yes, as near as possible, the same size as that one that your family is about to devour.
Oh, yes, sir. You're going to keep the stone, sir?
Yes, here, in my strong box. And I'll just drop a note to the Countess to say we've found it. Hurry up, Peterson.
Oh, yes, sir. £1,000. Of course, stone of crows.
No, the geese, Peterson.
Mr. Henry Baker, if I'm not mistaken. Do come in, Mr. Baker.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Sit down, won't you? Pray sit down.
Thank you.
This is my good friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Mayn't I help you to a whiskey and soda, Mr. Baker?
Oh, thank you. I'll leave out the soda, if I may, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, of course. You see, Watson.
Congratulations, Holmes. The very man as you described him.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, nothing, sir. Forgive us. A private matter. Huh?
Now, Mr. Baker, you've come, haven't you, in answer to my advertisement. Is this your hat?
This? Oh, yes, sir, undoubtedly.
Then pray allow me to return it to you with my compliments. The bird, I am afraid, we've been compelled to eat.
What? Oh, dear.
Careful, Mr. Baker. You'll spill your drink.
It was quite a necessity, I'm afraid, since in these modern days we seem to have lost the art of refrigeration in which our Elizabethan ancestors were so adept. However, there's this other bird here on the sideboard to which you're extremely welcome as a replacement.
That's uncommonly kind of you, sir.
Not at all. Of course, we still have the feathers and the crop of your own bird, if you'd like to take them, too.
Oh, you're an honest man, sir, but the disjecta member of my late acquaintance are hardly likely to be of much use to me. But I will have one more drink, if I may. Very small.
Most certainly. Would it trouble you, Mr. Baker, to tell me where you got that uncommonly fine bird of yours?
Not at all, sir. I'm a member of a Christmas goose club run by the landlord of the Alpha Inn near the museum.
The Alpha Inn, Watson?
Ah.
I got it there in exchange for my weekly fourpences, which I've been paying since last April.
Well, that's good value for 12 shillings, Mr. Baker, eh?
Yes. I really am most grateful to you for your kindness, sir. I was set on by some roughs in the street, and I lost it.
All's well that ends well, Mr. Baker. We were fortunate enough to find it, so here's your hat.
Thank you.
And here is your new bird. Oh, I've put the old ticket onto it, the one that was tied to the other goose's leg, marked to Mrs. Henry Baker.
Oh, how nice of you. I'm much obliged, sir.
Well, not at all. A peace offering, Mr. Baker.
A peace offering, sir, in point of fact, to my better half.
Ah, quite.
Good night, sir, and thank you again.
Good night, Mr. Baker.
Good night, sir.
Well, so much for Mr. Henry Baker, Watson.
Well, it's quite evident that he was innocent, of course, from the trap you laid. I mean, about the feathers and the crop.
Yes, evident. I suggest, Watson, that we turn that proposed dinner of ours into a late supper. I'll tell Mrs. Hudson, she'll forgive us. And in the meanwhile, let's follow up the clue of the Alpha Inn.
By all means, Holmes, I confess I'm most intrigued.
As I'm afraid we shall have to battle our way out through those infernal waits who are making night so hideous on our humble doorstep. Come, Watson, we've work to do this Christmas Eve.
It was a bitter night, and so we drew on our ulsters and wrapped our mufflers about our throats. We swung through the doctor's quarters of Wimpole Street and Harley Street, and so along the great thoroughfare of Oxford Street, where the crowds were thinning now, to Bloomsbury. And there, in a forgotten corner, we found the Alpha Inn. And from the rosy landlord, learnt that the geese for his Christmas club had come from a dealer named Breckenridge in Covent Garden.
Yes, here's the market, Holmes. What was the name of the goose dealer?
Breckenridge, Watson. Yeah, there it is, you see? The largest stall of the lot. There's the name written up over it.
Yes, just in time. They're closing up. Horsey-looking fella, isn't he?
What's that you say, horsey? Good for you, Watson. That fact might come in useful. Ah, good evening, Mr. Breckenridge. It's a cold night.
Cold enough, I reckon. Glad to get finished.
Sold out of geese, I see.
Let's have 500 tomorrow morning.
Ah, that's no good, I'm afraid. We want one tonight.
Here, there's someone that stall over there with a gas flare. Now, excuse me.
Oh, we were recommended to you particularly, Mr. Breckenridge.
Oh, who by?
By the landlord of the Alpha Inn in Bloomsbury.
Yes, you supplied him with some incomparable birds, he told us. Where did you get them from, by the way?
Now, look here. What exactly are you driving at, mister?
Why, nothing, only that I wanted to know who sold you those geese.
I'm dashed if I tell you, then. You're another one to pester me, are you?
Another one? What do you mean?
When I pay good money for a thing, that should be the end of it, I say. But it's, where are those geese, and who did you sell those geese to, till I'm sick of it? You'd think that lot were the only geese in the world, the way some folk keep on at me about them.
Well, I can assure you that we've nothing to do with any other people who've been making inquiries, Mr. Breckenridge. In fact, all I'm concerned with is a little bet I've made.
A bet?
Just so. I'm always ready to back my opinion, and I've bet a fiver with my friend the doctor here that the bird we ate from the Alpha Inn was country bred.
You've lost your fiver then, because it was town bred.
No, 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 it was nothing of the kind.
It was, I tell you. God, do you think you know more about fowls than I do when I've been in the trade, man and boy?
I tell you, it's country bred.
Each town. Here, will you take a bet with me too?
With pleasure. A sovereign. Every penny of it.
Right, it's on now. Where's that ruddy book of mine? Ha-ha. Here it is. Here. Just look in there, Mr. Cocksure.
Well, what's this?
That's the list of the folk I buy from, see? And what I do with the stuff when I bought it. Now then, look at that name there, do you see?
Can you see it, Watson, in this light?
Yes, yes. Mrs. Oakshott, isn't it?
That's right, Mrs. Oakshott. And what's the address, eh?
117 Brixton Road. Egg and poultry supplier.
Brixton Road, Mr. Iron Mighty. And what's the last entry under it, eh?
December the 22nd, 24 geese at 7 and 6.
And who were they sold to, eh?
Sold to Mr. Windigate of the Alpha at 12 shillings.
Right. And so what do you say now, Mr. Blooming Poultry Fancier?
Well, I must say I could have sworn it was country bred. All right, you win, Mr. Breckenridge. There's your sovereign.
Thank you.
Come along, Doctor. I owe you five, I think.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, easy money, that's what I say. Well, good evening, gents. Merry Christmas.
Good evening, Mr. Breckenridge. Yeah, come on, Tom. Give him this up here. Why you want to do? Well, Watson, let's stand here by the gas lamp for a moment. I want to think.
I tell you, I don't know nothing about it.
Well, you're ready, well,
all to, then. You get out of here, I'll
say. Well, I want
you.
Hello, what's going on?
Was there some kind of a quarrel, Holmes, back there at Breckenridge's stall?
Oh, yes, so there is. Let's see what's the matter.
Look, look, that little rat-faced fella, do you see? Breckenridge is threatening him.
Now, I tell you, I've had enough of you angel blooming geese.
I was only asking
you. Yeah, well, you've asked the same before and you've got the same ruddy answer. You ain't anybody else.
One of them geese was mine, I say.
Well, you can ask Mrs. Blooming Oakshot for it.
She told me to ask you.
Yeah, then you can ask the King of Prussia for all I care. You get off now. Go on, I'll knock your teeth out, mind you. Here,
here. Let's go on. Oh, give it a bit of teeth, Harry boy.
Go on, you blooming nosy talker, you.
The little fellow's coming this way, Watson. It looks as if we've saved our trip to Brixton.
You want me to collar him?
Stand by if he gets nasty. He looks a bit of a shrimp, though. Not much trouble.
Here, my man, not so fast. I'd just like a word with you.
What? Here, over you. What do you want?
I couldn't help overhearing your little disagreement with the good salesman over there, and I think I might be able to assist you.
How do you mean? How could you know anything? Who are you, eh?
My name is Sherlock Holmes, and it's my business to know what other people don't know.
Well, you can't know anything about this.
On the contrary, you're trying to trace some geese which were sold by a Mrs. Oakshott to that man there who sold them to the landlord of the Alpha Inn, who got rid of them through his goose club, of which Mr. Henry Baker is a member.
What? Why, you're the very man I've been looking for, Mr. Holmes. Oh, I can hardly tell you how much it means to me.
Watson, be good enough to signal for a four-wheeler, will you?
Yes, certainly.
I think, my friend, we'd better discuss this whole matter in some cozy place, rather than in the crowded street. We'll go to my room, shall we? Oh, what's your name, may I ask?
My name's Robinson. John Robinson.
No, the real name. It's always so awkward doing business with an alias.
All right, then. James Ryder.
Ah, head attendant of the Hotel Cosmopolitan, yeah. I believe. Quite so. Yeah, you have the cab, Watson.
Just coming over, Holmes.
Splendid, splendid. Now, would you mind just standing on Mr. Ryder's other side and just take him by the arm, will you? He might have a fancy to go for a little walk. Well, now, here we are. The fire looks very seasonable this weather. Do put some more coal on, would you, Watson? Now then, pray take the basket chair, Mr. Ryder. You look chilly.
I'll make some more punch, I think, Holmes. We could all do with a warming.
Thank you, Watson, if you will. You'll find the lemons behind you on the gasogene stand.
And the nutmeg scraper?
There, behind the Persian slipper. Oh, you might hand it to me, will you, dear fellow? I'd like some tobacco.
Certainly.
Thank you so much. Well, now, Mr. Ryder.
Yes, sir?
You want to know what became of those geese, Mr. Ryder, or rather of that goose. For I fancy it was only one that you were interested in, a white one with a black bar across its tail.
Oh, if you could only tell me, sir, I'd be that grateful. Mm. It's really mine, you see, sir. It was sold by mistake.
And a most remarkable bird, if I may say so, Mr. Ryder. Watson, hand me over my strong box, if you please. That bird laid an egg after it was dead, Mr. Ryder. The bonniest, brightest little blue egg that ever was seen. I have it here.
Oh, merciful heaven!
The game's up, Ryder.
Steady, man, steady, or you'll be in the fire.
Hang on to him, Watson.
It's all right, Holmes, I've got it. Almost fainting, poor devil. I'll get him a brandy.
Poor devil, hey, heavens, what a worm the fellow is. He's not got blood enough to go in for felony.
Well, there you are, my man. Drink it up.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Oh, what have I done? What have I done?
You know perfectly well what you've done, Ryder. It only needs one or two more links, Watson, to make the case complete. Now then, Ryder, who told you of the Countess of Morker's jewel, the blue carbuncle?
It was Catherine Cusack, sir. I swear it was her idea.
The Countess's waiting maid, Holmes.
Exactly. And so you invented some excuse to send that unfortunate young Horner into the Countess's hotel room, and after he was gone, you rifled the jewel case, raised the alarm, and put the blame onto him.
Yes, sir, I did, sir. Oh, for heaven's sake, have mercy, Mr. Holmes. I never went wrong before. It was Cathy was to blame.
Get
oh,
up
please,
off the floor, man. It's no good kneeling to me. You didn't show much mercy to Horner, did you?
I'll leave the country, sir. The charge will break down against
get
him.
Get up. Get up. Watson, help me onto his feet, for heaven's sake.
What I want to know is how the stone got into the goose rider. There, man, take another drink.
Well, it was all a mistake, you see, sir. Once I had it, I wanted to hide it somewhere. It seemed to burn a hole in my pocket. So I went to my sister, you see, to think things out.
Your sister?
Maggie. She married a man called Oakshott.
Uh-huh.
And she fattens fowls for the market at Brixton.
Ah, Oakshott, eh?
Well, I was thinking it out in her yard, see, smoking a pipe-like. And I remember that Maggie had promised me a bird for Christmas, so I had an idea.
You forced the stone down the bird's throat?
Yes, sir. Well, just then Maggie came out to see what I was up to, and the bird got free for a minute. But I went and caught it again, and Maggie and I killed it. I had a notion to take the stone to a chap I knew up in Kilburn that told me once he knew how to get rid of stolen property. And I thought it would be safe from any search in the bird's crop, you see, sir. Even if the police did take it into their hands to stop me. They weren't all that certain about Orna, you see.
Ah, when you got to Kilburn, it wasn't there.
No, sir, so I rushed back to Maggie. By that time, all the other birds had gone to market, see. There was two of them with barred tails, you see, sir. I'd caught the wrong one after it had got away. I've been at that stall at the garden ever since, trying to find out where it had gone. Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Ah. Well, what are you going to do, Holmes?
I'm not quite sure, but I think all things considered, it might be best to... Get out, Ryder.
What? You mean...
I mean get out, man.
Oh, heaven bless you, Mr. Holmes.
I don't want to hear any more from you. Get out.
Thank you, Mr.
Get
Holmes.
Out!
Heaven bless you, sir.
Well, well, a most singular and whimsical business, my dear Watson.
Ah, my dear Holmes. Shouldn't you have turned him in?
Well, when all's said and done, Watson, I'm really not retained by the police to supplement their deficiencies. As soon as I send the stone back, the case against Horner will collapse at once. There'll be no witness.
But you're committing a felony, you know.
Well, it's just possible that I'm also saving a soul. I don't believe he'll go wrong again. He's too scared. Besides, Watson...
Well?
Well, this is the season of forgiveness, man. Listen. 12 o'clock. It's Christmas Day. Oh, pass me some of that delicious punch of yours, won't you? And tell me you forgive me, too.
Forgive you? In heaven's name, for what?
For being so surly yesterday morning when you offered me the compliments of the season. I return them now with all my heart. And here's your health, old friend, with my glass upraised. A Merry Christmas, my dear Watson.
A Merry Christmas, Holmes.
God save Her Gracious Majesty.
Amen.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the original stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, have been dramatized anew with original music composed by Sidney Torch. Sir Ralph Richardson played the part of Dr. Watson and Sir John Gielgud that of Sherlock Holmes. The program was produced by Harry Allen Towers.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web, with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have an episode of Suspense, with a Christmas theme set in occupied Korea. By 1959, TV had become more popular than radio, but Suspense was still a favorite. TV special effects couldn't compete with your imagination. This is a really spooky Christmas tale. Suspense, Korean Christmas Carol, first broadcast December 20th, 1959, on CBS.
And now, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. The time, Christmas 1958. The place, Korea. The story, A Korean Christmas Carol. Written for Suspense by George Bamber.
Sounds good, doesn't it? You hear kids singing, I mean. I can't understand the language, but I know what they mean. They sound so fresh and full of promise, almost as if they knew. But then I'm getting ahead of myself. The name's Connolly, PFC Larry Connolly. I'm a soldier in Korea. I was sent here just about a year ago, this time. And that's where this strange story begins. Christmas, 1958. Christmas was for me that year miserable. I've been stuck on guard the night before, and so I planned to stay in bed the next day and forget about Christmas. I hadn't counted on my first sergeant. Since I was the first man he came to in the barracks, it's only logical that I should be the man he picks to drive a truck all the way to Seoul and back. It It was night by the time I got on the road, headed back from Seoul. It started to snow. Big flakes coming down soft at first, then so thick and fast I could hardly see. I was just over that first range of mountains. I was starting on the twisting, slippery way down when I saw him. The sight of him scared me wide awake. He was standing bareheaded, the wind whipping the snow and his hair around his face. When he raised his thumb, I had the strangest feeling he'd been expecting me. Almost as if it were unnecessary. As if he knew I'd stop. You want a lift? I'm going as far as Camp Santa Barbara.
Well, where's that?
You mean, where's that? Everybody knows where Camp Santa Barbara is. Don't stand there with the door open. Hop in.
All right.
Well, you picked a lousy place to hitchhike. Just didn't stop.
Oh, thanks.
What happened to your gloves? Your hands look half frozen.
Gloves? Well, I must have lost them.
Must have, don't you know?
Yes, sure. I must have left them laying on the counter of the PX back there.
Leave your hat back there, too?
No, I lost my hat in the dark. I fell.
I suppose that's why your uniform's muddy and your jacket's torn.
Oh, yes, that's right, of course. I was walking along the edge of the road and I slipped in the dark. And I slid halfway down the embankment before I could stop.
I see you managed to hang on to your bag.
Oh, yeah, I can't afford to lose that. It's important. I'm late as it is.
What outfit you from?
3rd Recon, 7th Division Infantry.
Infantry? There's no artillery up this way. The infantry's stationed about 7 miles back. You're heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah, well, 3rd Recon is a special detachment. We're off in the hills, all by ourselves. It's just off this road.
Never heard of it before. My name's Connolly. Larry Connolly. What's yours?
Oh, thanks. Mine's Richard Dombrowski.
Good to know you, Dombrowski.
Uh-huh.
Say, look, if you can let go of that bag long enough, I'll let you wear my gloves till your hands warm up.
Oh, no. Thanks. That's all right. I'll put them in my pockets. Say, is it okay if I set my bag on the floor?
Oh, sure. No sweat. Mm-hmm. Say, you don't have a cigarette, do you? I'm fresh out.
Well, I don't know. Wait a minute. Yeah, here's some. Let me light it for you, though. You watch the road. I saw a whole truckload of troops disappear over that curve up ahead. Killed all but two.
Yeah? When that happened?
1951.
1951?
Yep.
You were here when the war was on.
I guess you could say that.
Tell me, Dombrowski, what were you doing Christmas Day? That they didn't send you all the way to Seoul with an empty truck on a wild goose chase. That's what I did today. What did you do 7 years ago?
Well, you see those lights up ahead? That's the village of Chungju-ri. We marched through there the day before Christmas.
Were you scared?
Oh, I think everybody's scared.
Hey, look out. You'll burn yourself.
What's the matter?
Cigarette burned all the way down to your fingers.
Oh.
Isn't it burning you?
Well, that? No. I guess it burned itself out before it got to my skin. Anyway, you see that hill over there? Well, Christmas Day, 1951, my platoon was all dug in around that hill.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. We went out on a patrol from that hill. And that was one time I was plenty scared. As a matter of fact, it happened just 7 years ago tonight. It hadn't snowed that day, but there was snow on the ground. I can remember because the guys were joking that at least we had a white Christmas. And what a Christmas it was.
As I said, it was quiet Christmas Day, 1951. We were sitting around in our holes waiting for the fun, which we knew would begin the next day. They'd managed to get hot turkey up to us, so we were relatively comfortable and happy until Brownie, our squad leader, came back from a talk with the old man.
All right, I'll take the first five. The old man wants us to go out and have a look around.
Come on,
knock it off. Get rid of your dog tags and canteens. Anything that might rattle or make a noise. We won't be gone long, but we're moving light. Hey, Whitey, might as well leave your helmet here. We want to move quiet.
But, Sarge, it's too cold to go out without a hat.
Cut the comedy, Walker.
We moved out on schedule just as night was falling. And with the night came the cold.
We moved rapidly along the valley for about an hour or so when Brownie stopped and raised his hand.
All right, you men, hold it up. Once we get on the other side of that ridge up ahead, we'll observe maximum security. No talking, no lights. Keep down. And watch where you put your big clumsy feet.
Yeah.
These people just love tripwires with flares attached. Walker, you still got the walkie-talkie?
If I didn't, I wouldn't be here to tell you about it.
Still working?
It's warm, if that's what you mean. That's more than I can say for myself.
All right, keep it that way. We may need it if we run into trouble. Hey, while we're here, let's take one last check on your gear. Make sure your rifle bolts aren't frozen, weapons on safety, and all grenades are secure in the pins. Okay, everybody set? Let's move out.
And so we did move out. The young one felt light in my hands, like I'd never realized how light and easy it was to carry a rifle before. The going was easy. The rice paddies were frozen over and covered with snow, and we stepped carefully between the clumps of rice stubble left over from the last harvest, so the dry straw made no noise. We walked steadily, quietly, maybe 200 yards without a sound, regularly stepping up and over each low rice paddy wall as we came to it, each one bringing us just that much closer to the top. And then it happened.
Hit! Down! Hit the target! Get down!
Somebody must have tripped a wire because suddenly the inky black was transformed into the merciless white of the operating table. Everything seemed stopped and slowed down, just like an old movie before the projector blows up. I could see the other guys, the hills, and the deadly, winking fires of the guns. And then we fell down to the protection of the earth. And some of us fell with metal in our bodies.
Crawl, crawl, you apes! Crawl to the mud pipe and stay low. They can't hit us there.
And we crawled, digging our knees and fingers into the frozen mud until they were bruised and torn. We crawled closer to the ground and faster than we ever had before. We crawled to the sanctuary of a foot-high mud hill.
Keep your heads down. We got a sprint. Was about 150 yards to our front.
Where's the other?
Yeah, there's 200 yards to the left.
They got us pinned in a crossfire. We'll never get out of here.
All right, now don't panic. Keep your head down, we'll make it out. Walker, see if you can raise Lady Wolf on the walkie-talkie. Walker?
Walker's laying out there in the middle of the paddy, Brownie. He's never going to have to worry about being warm again.
Smith's out there, too. I saw him get it. I saw it when the flare went up. I saw him catch it in the face.
Okay, Harry, easy. He's still got the walkie-talkie. Can you see if it's all right?
He's laying on it. It's hard to tell.
Whitey, that flare is going to go out mighty quick. If a man was fast, he could probably streak out there and back before they put up another one. We can use that walkie-talkie to call up some artillery to get these monkeys off our back.
I can't, Brownie. I must have been hit. I can't move my legs anymore. I can't even feel them.
Easy. Are you bleeding bad?
No.
Harry, you all right?
As far as I know.
Stevens?
Sure. I'd like to take a whirl at that walkie-talkie.
Wait till that flare burns out.
It's dying now.
Just a few more seconds. Go!
By the time the flare lit the sky, Stevens was halfway back, the walkie-talkie dangling from his right hand. Of course, but in midair, some huge, invisible hand slapped him to the ground.
I'm hit. Oh, God, I'm hit.
Easy, boy. Quiet. Where'd they get you?
I'm hit.
Look him over, Harry.
They busted his arm.
See any other places?
No, just his arm.
Wrap a dressing around it and button it inside his jacket. Hand me that walkie-talkie.
It's no good, Brownie. The walkie-talkie smashed.
What?
It's useless.
We're going to have to move out of here fast.
Well, how are we going to pull out? If we can't crawl back down the paddy, they'll slaughter us.
All right, look. We'll move along the dike to the edge of the rice paddy. From there, we can duck into the underbrush and move back down the mountain.
We'll never make it. They'll spot us when we try to make across the clearing to the underbrush. They'll swing their guns around.
We got to try it. We can't stay here. Stevens, can you crawl?
Yeah, I can make it.
Okay, now you lead off and I'll follow you. I'll crawl backwards and pull Whitey along behind me.
Whitey?
You heard me.
Well, we'll never make it with...
Quiet! All you have to do, Harry, is follow along behind and pick up the pieces. Take his weapon. It'll make him lighter.
Keep your hands off me, Harry.
Come on, Whitey. We haven't any time to fool around.
I'm not fooling. I'm not going with you guys.
Come on. You lost too much blood already.
That's just it. Like you said, Brownie, it's only a matter of time. You can't get anywhere with me. You'll never even get past the clearing trying to drag me across. You're smart enough to know that, Brownie. It'll be tough enough, even with two good legs.
We're not leaving you here.
That's what I figured you'd say, Brownie.
I'm still in charge here.
I figured you'd say that, too. Brownie, you see this grenade? It doesn't have any pin in it. The only thing that keeps the spring from kicking the clip off is my hand. Now get out of here, Brownie, before I let it go.
Oh, why do you like...
You want me to let loose of this grenade? Now prop that BAR up on the dike in front of me and scatter the clips where I can get at them. I'll wait until you guys get to the edge of the paddy before I open up.
Look, baby.
I'm still holding the grenade, Brownie. Time is running out. You're going to have to hurry. I feel like I want to fall asleep, and I don't know how much longer I can stay awake. Just wish me a very Merry Christmas and beat it.
Merry Christmas, Whitey. All right, you guys, what are you waiting for? Let's move out.
See, that's right. This is Christmas.
Oh, little town of Bethlehem, how still we see.
What's the matter? Don't you people like Christmas carols? Well, machine gun fire always was better getaway music than Christmas carols.
Above thy dark and dreaming...
Whitey lay there until the others had crawled to the end of a low rice paddy wall. And then he threw his grenade. When it exploded, he opened up with a BAR, making enough noise to make the enemy think the patrol was launching an attack. Both machine gun nests zeroed in on him, but Whitey stayed well below the little mud wall of the rice paddy, humming his Christmas carol, loading the BAR with a fresh clip every time it went empty, and perhaps wondering briefly why he was going to die so far away from home. A little pond of frozen mud he didn't care about or even own. Still firing and singing, even after the rest of the squad had escaped into the underbrush, and until either the machine gunners found their mark, or else he finally fell asleep.
Gosh, he was quite a guy.
No, I guess it was just a detail that had to be done, and he had to do it. Well, there's my stop right there where that little road turns off up ahead.
Your detachment's up that road?
That's right at the end of it.
Sure, I've seen that road before, but I didn't think there was anything up there.
Well, just let me out here.
Yeah, sure thing.
Thanks a lot.
No sweat.
Say, if you ever want to look me up, remember my outfit's all the way up at the end of this road. I'll be right up there.
Okay, I'll drop in sometime.
Right. So long. And thanks again.
I drove off figuring it'd be a very cold day in Korea before I ever looked him up. Such a weird guy gave me the creeps. I got about 5 miles down the road when I discovered he'd left his bag sitting on the floor of the Deuce and a Half. Took a lot of arguing with myself, but I decided that the only decent thing I could do was to swing around and take it back to him. Besides, maybe I could stop in the orderly room and check him out. Find out what his story really was. On the way back, I almost missed the road because it was so small and seldom used. I drove up it for about 10 minutes. I was beginning to wonder if I hadn't gotten the wrong road after all, as I passed no other vehicles or GIs or anything to indicate there was an infantry company around. Just when I was ready to turn back to the main road, I saw lights twinkling up ahead from what looked like a couple of Quonsets. It seemed impossible that an infantry outfit could be housed in two Quonsets, but I pulled a Deuce and a Half to a halt outside the gate and cut off the motor. I picked up the AWOL bag, got out of the truck, trying to figure out which one was the orderly room. I walked across the hard-packed snow of the yard to the first Quonset. I still couldn't figure it out. Light and warmth seemed to pour from the windows along with the music I remembered from somewhere, but couldn't quite understand.
I stepped up to the first window I came to and looked inside. There were kids all over the place, kids of all sizes and descriptions, kids just old enough to sit by themselves, kids just losing their first teeth, some just starting their teens. I stood in the snow spellbound, just watching them sing. Finally, I tore myself away and headed for the front door, eager to be inside. A plaque made out of the howitzer shell stopped me. In the faint light, I could just barely make out the words engraved on the polished brass. But finally, I read it all. It said, "This orphanage has been erected and maintained in the memory of Corporal Richard Whitey Dombrowski, who somewhere north of the village of Chungju-ri, Christmas night 1951, willingly gave his life that others might live." Suddenly, I didn't know where I belonged anymore. The AWOL bag dragged at the end of my arm like a 1,000-pound weight. I could figure what was in it, but I tore it open anyway. The bag full of candy, soap, and toothpaste and gum shined up at me, looking as rich and rare as frankincense and myrrh. I closed the bag, laid it up against the door, close, so they wouldn't miss it. And then I banged on the door as loud and long as I could, until I was sure that they heard me. And then I ran. I ran back down the road to my truck as fast and as hard as I could.
Suspense. You've been listening to A Korean Christmas Carol, written for Suspense by George Bamber. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of Suspense. In tonight's story were Bill Lipton as Larry Connolly and Lyle Soudreau as Richard. Also heard were Larry Robinson, Lawson Zerbe, Bill Meader, Alan Manson, and Guy Rep. Listen again next week when we return with Moonlight Sail, written especially for Suspense by William N. Robeson. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Next, we have our 11-minute bonus track. Cinnamon Bear was a popular children's show in 1937. In 1938, its creators made Jonathan Thomas and His Christmas on the Moon. Short episodes were broadcast every day between Thanksgiving and Christmas in 1938. I think you will enjoy this imaginative episode of Jonathan Thomas and His Christmas on the Moon, first broadcast November 29, 1938, by McGregor Syndication.
The story of Jonathan Thomas and His Christmas on the Moon. This is the story of a wee little boy who has just turned 6, and his name is Jonathan Thomas. And what happened to him is not just fiddlesticks, for right here's where we make the promise. It could have happened to you if you were not you, but instead were Jonathan Thomas, who said his prayers every night upstairs and jumped into bed clear up to his head and snuggled and juggled and ruggled and chuggled, because Christmas was not very far off, and was as good as he could, as all other boys would, if Christmas were coming so soon. For if he was bad and not merry and glad, his dad would not like such a lad and be sad and even a bit mad and not read fairy tales in his room where the moon disgustingly listened to his weepings and wails. But here is the story, and it's true, don't you worry, 'cause remember, I made you the promise. It's as true blue, and could have happened to you if it hadn't happened to Jonathan Thomas. You see, the big grandfather clock in the hall had just struck 8, and Jonathan Thomas had had his bath and said his prayers and kissed Mummy and Nan and then taken the hand of his dad And up the stairs they went. 1, 2, button your shoe. 3, 4, shut the door. Until they were to where you say 11, 12, the kitchen shelf. And then down the hall and in the room and whisk into bed.
Now, pull the covers up so you won't catch the sneezles.
Daddy.
What is it?
Mommy said if I was to brush my teeth four times, you were to speak a story.
Well, now, and did you brush your teeth that many times?
Uh-huh.
Then what shall the story be about?
About Jonathan, Thomas, and Gus.
Jonathan, Thomas, and Gus?
Uh-huh.
Well, once upon a time, there was a little...
Wait, Daddy.
Hmm?
Gus has got to hear, too. He can't if he's under the covers.
Oh, well then, by all means, we must haul him out from under the covers. But Gus would be as angry if he didn't hear the story. And he'd probably cry until his sawdust got wet. Now. Let's sit him up on the pillow. And we'll twist one ear a little further forward, so he'll have no difficulty in hearing. Now then, are we ready?
Uh-huh.
Well, once upon a time, there was a wee little boy who had just turned 6. And his name was Jonathan Thomas. And he had a beautiful stuffed teddy bear named Gus. And one night, when Jonathan Thomas went to bed, away upstairs, after he'd brushed his teeth, and when he was tucked in with Gus by his side, and when he was asleep, a long, slender moonbeam made of pure silver came through the window. Like that. And down the moonbeam came sliding two of the queerest creatures you ever did see. Like that. And there they were, laughing and chuckling and giggling and poking their fingers at Jonathan Thomas, who was sound asleep as he could ever be. But right away, quick as 46 tigers, Gus opened his left eye. And then his right eye. And he saw the creatures. And then he opened his mouth and went. And he jumped from the bed right after those creatures. And those creatures ran up the moonbeam. And Gus ran after them, barking like everything or woofing or whatever koala bears do. And all this noise woke up Jonathan Thomas. And he saw Gus running up the moonbeam. And he jumped right out of bed and right up the moonbeam after Gus, shouting as loud as ever he could.
Gus, come back, Gus. Very strange place. Maybe I'd better knock on this door. Oh, hello.
Well, goodness gracious, my land and Jiminy Crickets. Whatever do you mean by knocking on my door when the sign plainly says absolutely no knocking until after 9 o'clock daylight saving moon time? Where are you? I mean, who are you? I don't see your name written on you anywhere. Well, speak up. Or has the cat got your tongue? If he has, we'll write him a letter and tell him to bring it back straight away quicker than you could say Jet Robinson. Yuck! Isn't that silly of me? If the cat really got your tongue, you couldn't say Jack Robinson, could you?
My name is Jonathan Thomas.
What a silly name. Thomas and Jonas. Oh, there, never mind. We can't all have beautiful names like Squamboozle or Flimfaddle, can we? I had a grandfather once.
Have you seen Gus?
Don't change the subject. Who's Gus?
He's my teddy bear, and he ran away.
Well, then why don't you go there and look for him instead of pestering me? Don't stand there in the doorway. Either come in or stay out. Yes, you'll have to do one or the other, you know. You can't do both at the same time. It's against the law.
If you please, sir, I'll come in.
What a silly thing to say, young man. It's not if I please, but if you please. Yeah. Have you had your breakfast?
Oh, no, sir.
Well, then who did have it if you didn't?
No one, I don't think.
You mean no one you do think. For if no one did have it instead of you, you'd know it. And if I were you, I shouldn't let no one have it again. Mr. No One's getting entirely too many breakfasts lately. Yep. Will you have breakfast with me?
Oh, I should like that very much, if you don't mind.
Well, of course, I don't mind, except for old King Cole. Yeah, and I have to mind him, or he'll throw me in jail for 1,000,000,000,000,000 years. And then, what would you like for breakfast?
Oh, I'd like just anything.
Well, I haven't got any of that. You shouldn't go around wanting things that people haven't got. Yep. Well, I can give you oatmeal, porridge, and cream, and some squaffles, and baconate.
Oh, Thank you very much. That sounds the bestest of anything.
Well, of course it does. Yep. I don't think I like anything very well myself much. Unless it's cooked just right. Well, now come along. It'll be too late for breakfast. You'll have to eat lunch instead. That would be terrible.
Oh, I'm as full as 2 times 2. That was the bestest breakfast I ever ate. Oh, but I wish Gus was here. Do you think we could find him?
Well, I suppose we can. If you know where he is.
But I don't know.
Well, then how on the moon do you expect to find him if you don't know where he is? Of course, it might be that the squibobblims have him.
Who?
Only owls say, who? Haven't you ever heard of the squibobblims? They're always catching something. A long time ago, they caught little Bo Peep's sheep. And they never brought him back. And only last Tuesday, I had a cold. Oh, it was a beautiful cold. And they caught that. And I haven't seen it since. They're a most dreadful people.
Are they? Oh, you think they caught Gus?
Well, I shouldn't be at all surprised. But I sometimes am.
Oh, I hope not. Because next to my mommy and dad, I love Gus the bestest.
Yeah. Do you hear anything?
Of course I do. There's somebody at the door.
Oh, my goodness, I thought so. Now I'll have to say come in, for I can't say stay out, for whoever it is already out. So I'll have to say come in.
Well, can't you just say nothing at all?
I don't know. I've never tried. What does it mean? Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. I'll just have to say come in. Yes, I will, yes, I will, yes, I will. Come in! Oh, so it's you, is it?
Yep.
Well, what do you wish? And you can't have more than 3 wishes.
If you prefer, Mr. Man on the Moon, I have brought great news.
Well, let me see it.
I have come to tell you that you had better hide, because the wretched Squibobbles are coming. And now I have to go and tell everybody else. Goodbye.
Oh, my goodness, the Squibobbles are coming. Oh, this is terrible. Come quickly, Jonathan Thomas. We must hide ever so fast or they'll catch us.
Where will we hide?
Well, right here, of course. Where do you suppose? If the Squibobbles come into this room, just shut your eyes and don't make a sound.
Don't we have to hide somewhere?
No, because somewhere is too far to go and we haven't time. Just shut your eyes.
Can't they see us if we shut our eyes?
Of course they can. Who ever heard of such a thing? You can't see them, can you, with your eyes shut?
No.
Well, then how can they see us if we can't see them? I'd like to know. Uh-oh. My goodness. Here they come. Now, don't forget. Shut your eyes and don't make a sound.
All right. I won't.
Oh.
Somebody! Hop!
One more thing. If they should ask if anyone's here, tell them no. Shut your eyes now, quick.
Can you see anyone in here, General?
Oh, I can't see a soul. They must all be hiding.
You'd better ask and see.
Yes, sir. Is anyone in here?
No. We haven't seen him all day.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're extremely welcome.
There's no one here, General. You might as well leave. Over. Goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye. Oh, my goodness. That was a narrow escape. So narrow I could hardly squeeze through it. Well, you can open your eyes now, Jonathan Thomas.
Didn't they see us?
Of course not. How could they? You had your eyes shut all the time, didn't you? Oh, my goodness. There's more of it. Come in.
Quick. Where are we? The Squibobbleums have kidnapped Santa Claus.
Kidnapped Santa Claus?
And we must rush to rescue with him right away. Quick, away!
Oh, my goodness. Hurry, Jonathan Thomas. We must rush to the rescue. Santa Claus is being kidnapped. Oh, and there won't be any Christmas unless we rescue him. Come on, Jonathan Thomas. We must hurry like everything, only faster.
Well, it isn't very long until Christmas, and Santa Claus has been kidnapped. Will Jonathan Thomas and the Man on the Moon be able to find him in time? And what about Gus? Where is he? Don't forget to listen to the next adventure of Jonathan Thomas.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. Please join us again next week for another hour of holiday entertainment from the golden age of radio. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. And look for us on YouTube also. Thank you so much for listening. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.